It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, all about the COVID virus. Iowa's schools are closing. Last night, in a video conference statement, the governor, Kim Reynolds, announced 4 new cases of coronavirus in the state and recommended closing schools, public schools, for 4 weeks. We'll talk about that a little bit later with IPR's health reporter, Natalie Krebs. First of all, Iowa's legislative session will be suspended, also as of this weekend, when it was decided, for at least 30 days because of the COVID-19 disease. Let's talk about that with IPR state government reporter Katarina Sestarek, who is at the State House. Hi, Katarina.
Hi, Ben.
Tell us, what prompted this suspension on the weekend?
So over the weekend, Governor Kim Reynolds announced that there has been community spread of COVID-19 in the state, which means that public health officials can't figure out where the infected person got the disease. The previous cases were all linked to travel, especially international travel. And so now there have been cases in the state where they can't determine the source. And after that announcement Saturday night, on Sunday, legislative leaders decided that they would suspend the legislative session for 30 days to avoid, you know, getting vulnerable people sick.
Mm-hmm. So how have lawmakers planned out how the session will be in what, full pause mode for at least 30 days? What are some details you're hearing?
There still aren't a lot of details. They're really working those things out still themselves. This week was supposed to be funnel week, which is a big, busy week for where there's a deadline that kind of determines what bills can remain eligible for debate. That's obviously not happening anymore. It's not clear when the legislature ultimately comes back how that deadline will be dealt with. So it's still, there's a lot of unanswered questions at this time. And so they're just going to work on a few things that they feel they absolutely need to pass in order to keep state government going and potentially to give schools and the governor some flexibility that they might need to deal with COVID-19 before they officially suspend the session for 30 days at least.
Mm-hmm. Katarina, you are at the State House and you are regularly there covering what goes on in our legislature. What's it like there today? Does it have a different feeling? Does it seem different in any way? What's happening?
Well, the first difference is they're doing a health screening for everyone before they come into the building. So I got here when it opened to the public at 11. There's 2 tents outside of the Capitol. You go inside the tent and there are health workers in gowns and masks who ask you if you've been traveling out of the country in the past 2 weeks, or if you have, if you've had any runny nose or sore throat or coughing symptoms. And then they take your temperature and then they determine if you can get into the building or not. So it was a very quick, efficient process. But, you know, it was obviously different from a regular day at the Capitol. And then came in. All large events and things have been canceled at the Capitol, so there are very few people here. I actually saw a family, a mom and her two daughters, who were on the last tour of the Capitol. They were supposed to be canceled, and I guess in the middle of their tour, the tour guide got a call saying they have to stop the tour. Mm. So it's definitely just very much more empty than it typically is, and a lot of people are using a lot of hand sanitizer.
Right, and you said the lawmakers are there figuring out the details of this postponed session or this pause in the session for at least 30 days. So if I'm gathering this right, Katarina, they're working up, sort of tying up the loose ends on what the plan is before they depart the State House and have those things kind of tied up?
Right. So they, you know, in case that this lasts a lot long, you know, several months, and they can't pass a budget before the next fiscal year starts July 1st, they will have to, you know, have a way to allow government to continue operating. And there might be some other things they might have to pass in response to this disease pandemic.
And finally, Katarina, will the State House, the buildings, be closed in the next 30 days as soon as this starts? Not public, or nobody will be able to go in?
As of now, the building's not closed to the public. But again, anyone who is coming in here has to go through the health screening.
Okay. Katerina, we'll look forward to your reporting as you find out more there at the State House. IPR State Government reporter Katerina Sestarik. Thanks, Katerina.
Thanks, Ben.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, we had originally had plans, different plans for the show, as many of our plans have been upended by the virus outbreak, so have our plans for today. Originally, we plan to discuss current legislation to change Iowa's medical cannabis laws for the entire hour today with lawmakers. Our plans have obviously changed. We're going to touch on medical cannabis in the next few minutes, but we also want to get lawmakers' views on this epidemic, this outbreak, and the State House session suspension as well. Joining us by phone, two lawmakers. Senator Joe Bolcom is a Democrat from Iowa City. Senator Bolcom, welcome.
Good morning, Ben.
Representative Jared Klein is with us as well, a Republican from Kyoto. Representative Klein, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Good morning.
Let me ask you each, and let me start with you, Representative Klein. We're all taking this in individual ways. What are your chief concerns as we enter this new period of uncertainty in tackling the coronavirus?
Well, my chief concern would be making sure that we are doing everything, that we're acting cautiously, making sure we're listening to the experts that are advising us on where we need to be proceeding. So my effort is making sure that we're proceeding with caution to make sure everybody's safe and healthy, listening to the experts, which is exactly what we've been doing in conjunction with the governor and everyone else.
Mm-hmm. Senator Bolcom, your chief concerns?
Well, I want to start by thanking the healthcare workers that are working in our hospitals and doctor's offices and nursing homes and daycares. They and their families are going to be under incredible stress in the next few weeks and maybe months as we fight this epidemic. I'm concerned about the need for more testing. We need to get more people tested. To date, we've only had 315 tests run in Iowa. And we need to do a much better job and improve our ability for people to get tests. And I hope that improves in the coming days.
Of course, Senator Bolcom, your district also includes the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, where there was, we heard news on the weekend of a new Johnson County case being treated at the university hospitals. What is your understanding of how, if there is a problem with testing, how large it is? What is the problem exactly in your understanding?
Well, I think initially it's just I think the federal government has not really been on top of getting test kits out across the country, and I think that's going to be relieved some with bringing on private firms to do that. My concern about Iowa City, and frankly all our big cities where we're going to have a surge of sick people, is the ability of our hospitals and our medical people to manage. And I think the decision to close our public, to suspend our public universities, and probably we're going to see more school closures now that the governor is recommending a 4-week hiatus for our public schools. The reason to do that is to try and reduce the surge that could likely happen at our ICUs around the state and our hospitals. And we need to be aggressive about that. We need to overreact around this issue of social distancing. The more we do that, the more likely it is we're going to reduce kind of the onslaught that's just around the corner, I think, for our medical providers.
Mm-hmm. Representative Klein, how do you see your role at this time as an elected official, as a lawmaker, at a time of a national health emergency?
Well, our role is to ensure that the different departments and agencies have what they need to respond and act accordingly. And that's a lot of what we're working through today, is to make sure the governor has what she needs authority-wise to react and move everything forward in light of the recommendations we have that our leadership is asking for us to suspend the session. We need to make sure before we officially do that, we have all the tools available to address what we need going forward, so our agencies are fully have the funding they need and the flexibility they need to react accordingly.
Mm-hmm. Representative Klein, are you thus far happy with the way the state has interacted with the federal officials, the federal authorities, sort of hand in glove? Is that a well-practiced cooperation, or is there a learning curve there?
Well, I think there's a learning curve anytime you come across a situation like we're going through now. This is a unique time in our history with a with a very unique set of circumstances. I believe everyone is doing their best to work together to make sure we are providing for the safety and health of all the people in the country and all Iowans.
Mm-hmm. Senator Bolcom, do you foresee, or perhaps I've already experienced, any fundamental partisan disagreements on how we should handle this epidemic on so many issues? There's a Democratic view and a Republican view. Is there on this issue?
I think it's really important that we work together right now on this issue and avoid any kind of partisanship around this. I would also, though, say that it would be nice to have a more unified federal response to the problems and more unified advice from the federal government on things like school closure, business closure, reduced government services. I think now states are trying to figure this out to a large degree on their own. For example, Illinois has decided to close bars and restaurants. We haven't done that here in Iowa, and I suspect there might be some folks from Illinois going over to Davenport to have dinner or grab a beer. And we should have, I think, a more unified federal response. And I'm skeptical whether we're going to see that out of the current administration. But I think states would be well served by that.
Mm-hmm. Representative Klein, do you see a lack of the desired unity from in the response from the federal government? Do you see that as also a troubling problem?
That's not what I'm seeing as a problem. What I'm seeing is a lot of unity. I'm seeing at the state level that we're working across lines, that everybody's working together. And I believe that, you know, the CDC has been providing us answers, providing guidance to us so we can make a decision as a state on what we need to do and not a one-size-fits-all formula, because every area is going to be a little different. I think by them leaving enough flexibility for states to make decisions is a good thing, because we know what we need in Iowa better than somebody out in D.C., but their guidance has been extremely helpful as we work our way through this issue.
Mm-hmm. We are definitely at the front end of this. We've sort of entered this new era. We can all feel it. We're trying to keep calm and be smart and not have this virus spread in an uncontrolled fashion. So later, though, we will be evaluating the damage done to our economy, for instance. And you mentioned people at restaurants and bars. Representative Klein, do you have early thoughts on, you know, help for people whose jobs will obviously be severely damaged, if not destroyed, by this epidemic?
There's absolutely going to be things we're going to have to do to address the downside of what happens. The problem is we don't know how long this is going to go. We don't know where this ends. The sooner the better, but we do need to slowly trickle this through so that not everybody gets sick at the same time and that we don't over-inundate our hospitals and our healthcare industry. But if this goes too long, there's going to be serious economic consequences, not just for the folks that are today, but down the line. Think about the farmers. What do we do with livestock? How do we make sure that our packing plants continue operating? All these other pieces, so that people, because folks are still going to be sitting home in quarantine. They still need to eat. So we need to make sure all these things happen and we don't have a trickle-down effect that devastates everybody. Absolutely gives me unease, but it's hard to have an answer today because we don't know when this thing's going to clear up. We don't know how the weather's going to react once the heat gets here, how this is all going to come around. That for now, we have to proceed with caution, take steps, listen to the experts so that we can proceed with keeping Iowans as safe as we possibly can and recognizing the reality of the situation. But when all this shakes out and as we look back, we will have to figure out a way to make sure that folks are made whole and that people don't lose everything over this, and there'll be the actions taken in the meantime to make sure that things keep moving in the right direction and don't completely go off the rails.
Senator Bolcom, on that topic there, the unknown economic impact of what we're starting to experience, what are your thoughts?
Well, we're going to need some help from the federal government on that. Clearly, businesses are going to be threatened by going out of business. I've gotten several emails from local businesses very, very concerned about that. We may need a state package of resources as well to do some assistance to businesses. But, you know, we're trying to strike this balance between not overreacting and acting like we can just go on business as usual. But the more we do now to inconvenience ourselves, the more likely we will be to not overwhelm our healthcare system, and the more likely we will be that this will pass sooner rather than later. And you just need to look across the country where they are a week or two ahead of us with many more cases than we have, and to see what steps other state governments are doing. They are closing restaurants. They are closing bars. They are closing gyms. They are closing casinos, theaters. We are days away from that. And I think the sooner we take more aggressive action, the more likely it is we're going to prevent this healthcare surge at our hospitals and impacts to having this just go on and on and on. We need to be more aggressive rather than less aggressive at this point.
Senator Bolcom and Representative Klein, in the 5 minutes we have remaining before we end this segment of the show, I wanted to ask you just briefly about the topic we originally wanted to spend we were originally going to spend the hour talking about, that is medical cannabis. Let me summarize quickly what seems to be going on. The Iowa House passed a bill raising the THC cap for Iowa's medical cannabidiol program from 4.5 grams over 90 days. Remember, THC is a substance in marijuana that makes a person high. Governor Reynolds supports this increase. Last year, the governor vetoed a bill that asked for higher levels. Let me go to you first of all, Representative Klein. How do you see this legislation getting through both chambers? Are there sticking points? Is this THC cap a sticking point?
Well, it seems that the biggest sticking point is the THC cap. So to be clear, current law is a 3% cap. We would remove the percentage and move it to a 4.5 gram THC limit over 90 days per the board recommendation. Bear in mind, we have a board of medical professionals who do the studies, do the homework to advise the legislature, and they have a lot of good things they've done advising us. They've done the homework. They come back at 4.5. But there's an ability for a waiver. So if there's a terminal patient, they can get a waiver. Or if a doctor feels as though 4.5 is not treating their patient, they can recommend a higher level than that. It's a simple waiver system that'll be in place. So, example, you have somebody with chronic pain, and the patient, in consultation with the doctor, says, you know, this isn't working. We don't want to go back to opioids. 4.5 isn't quite cutting it. Let's bump you up to 6, to 8, to 20, mm-hmm. to whatever that doctor and that patient believes is the right course of action to treat the pain, to treat the problem, but not cause harm.
Mm-hmm. Senator Bolcom, do you agree with that way the law would be laid out?
Well, I think we continue to have the worst program in the country that doesn't help nearly the number of people that it could. I think the legislature's lost track of the patient in this entire conversation. It's been the Republicans have been obsessed with this whole issue of THC and the medicine. We'd be one of two states out of 33 that have medical cannabis programs that believe they have to monitor the amount of THC that patients get. In 2019, 2 million opioid prescriptions were written to almost 600,000 Iowans. 2 million prescriptions to 600,000 Iowans. We only have been able to sign up 4,200 medical cannabis patients in 5 years. So we should be working to transition people off of these deadly addictive opioids and onto much less addictive, not deadly, less harmful cannabis medicines. And if we keep the patient in mind, the average patient on our program is a 57-year-old woman in pain. We should be trying to figure out how to get safe medicine to that 57-year-old woman in pain, not just continue to hand out opioids like they're candy.
Mm-hmm. What do you make of that argument, Representative Klein?
Well, first of all, there are people that absolutely want a recreational program, but that's not what we have. What we have is a medical program, not a recreational program, masquerading as a medical program. We listen to the doctors. Bear in mind, we're a citizen legislature. We are not experts. We are farmers, teachers, truck drivers, you know, many different professions. We have a few nurses. We've got a couple pharmacists between the chambers. But by and all, we are not experts on medicine. We have the people that are experts on it, and they advise us accordingly to make sure we provide that relief, because the patient does come first. If we weren't thinking of the patient first and foremost, we would not have done anything. But because we do, and we recognize this is a failure of the federal government, that we as a state need to make sure we are responsive and supportive of our constituents, have put together, I believe, a good medical program that does exactly that. And we come back, we add conditions. We're adding two conditions with this bill, a narrow case of autism and PTSD, because the board did the work, and we listened to the board. Otherwise, what's the point of having the board if we're just going to do whatever we want based on anecdotal evidence? We wouldn't even need them, but instead I believe we need to listen to those medical professionals before we make our decisions, and that's exactly what we're doing, the bill I have.
Mm-hmm. Representative Klein, are you hearing from your constituents on this issue in the Keota area?
Oh, I have constituents I've heard on this issue for 10 years. And, you know, there's, just like any district, there's a varying degree of different opinions out there. I have a handful of constituents that would like a recreational program. I've got an overwhelming that believe we need to have a medical program, but it should not be overly available for anybody without being in consultation with some medical professional.
Mm-hmm. Joe Bolkin, we have time for 30 seconds from you to end this. Perhaps you can give us a longer-term view of where you think Iowa should be in terms of its relationship with cannabis in the future.
Yeah, well, usually we look around the country at what works and we copy it. We did not do that with the Iowa law. We've done the Iowa version, and we're going into our fourth legislative session with Republicans in control of all of state government, and they've just flubbed this issue. They have not listened to patients, and they put too many barriers in the way. We have the most expensive program in the country, the most bureaucratic program in the country, and I'm not hopeful. Maybe with COVID-19 we can put this particular piece of legislation to bed, because if we pass it, it'll reduce the effectiveness of the medicine for 2/3 of our current patients. We should do better. We can do better.
Senator Bolkin, we have to cut you off there. We are coming up on a break. Senator Joe Bolkin, Democrat from Iowa City. Representative Jared Klein, a Republican from Keota. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Coming up after a short break, we'll talk with Natalie Krebs, our health reporter. More on Corona when we come back. And we're glad to have you midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Coming up in just a few minutes, we'll check in with IPR's news director, Michael Leland. He'll join us to share thoughts on how IPR will be covering this epidemic. But first, let's talk about the school closings in the state. Governor Reynolds recommending Iowa schools close for 4 weeks. That's following the identification by state health officials of 2 new COVID-19 cases that are thought to be community spread. Now, here's a portion of her video statement released last night, Sunday. Reynolds says closing the schools will protect vulnerable Iowans and mitigate the spread of the virus.
As I said just last night in our press conference, I'm committed to following evidence-based guidelines to make the right decisions at the right time. And now is that time. We announced yesterday that Iowa had our first case of community spread of COVID-19. Today, we have 4 new cases of the virus, including 2 additional cases of community spread in other parts of our state. Unfortunately, we know now that we have substantial community spread across our state, which takes us to the next level of response. Based on this new information, I'm recommending that all Iowa schools close for the next 4 weeks to help mitigate the spread of COVID-19.
Joining me now, IPR's health reporter Natalie Krebs. Hi, Natalie.
Hi, Ben.
So that was a clip from the video last night, the video statement released by the governor last night. She will be speaking today a little bit later, and you'll be at that news conference. First of all, give us some background on the school closings in the state. What prompted it?
So over the weekend, there were three cases that are believed to be community spread. One was released on Saturday that was in Dallas County, and then two more Sunday evening, health officials said, in Johnson County and Polk County that were thought to be community spread. So Governor Reynolds issued a statement yesterday saying that she is just recommending that schools close for 4 weeks. We're expected to get more information on exactly what she means by that and the plan she has for the state this afternoon at a press conference.
Okay, this term community spread, explain a little bit more of the significance of that for those who don't understand. This is as juxtaposed with travel-related instances of infection, right?
Right. So the three individuals that were identified to, you know, have the virus possibly by community spread means they don't have any travel history related to kind of where the virus has been widespread. Possibly they don't know, they're not known to have any contact with people who've been diagnosed with COVID-19. So this is now, you know, an instance where the virus has been known to spread from person to person in the Iowa community.
Mm-hmm. And so this is a little bit like if this is a war, which was mentioned on the debate last night, that we thought these fortress walls held the virus outside, but we've now got the virus inside our fortress walls, so to speak.
Yeah, and, you know, the governor's used language like we're going to step it up a level. So, you know, they're looking at more closures, and this is obviously affecting schools and a lot of events around Iowa.
Mm-hmm. What else do you want to find out at the press conference soon to be held by Governor Reynolds?
Well, we're going to look at, you know, the governor's plan for the state, as well as sort of what health officials are recommending now that we've seen a couple of community spread cases, some clarification on what Iowans should be doing. You know, if they should be staying home, what's going on with that, and just kind of the latest on what you need to know about COVID-19.
Mm-hmm. What is the latest on how people can be tested? That's been a topic that's been fairly muddy in understanding. Are there test kits out there? When can you get tested? How do you get tested?
Right. So recently, three private companies have been allowed to test patients in the state of Iowa. The governor has said, you know, with more available testing, we're probably going to see more cases. At the moment, you know, the way that tests go is if you have symptoms at all, you're encouraged to call your provider, and then your provider, if the symptoms match COVID-19 symptoms, will, you know, issue a test to you and give you instructions on what you should do.
Mm-hmm. Remind us of some of the proactive measures that people can take. You know, some people are taking this very seriously, others not so seriously. Talk about some of the measures and the hotline people can call if they want to find out any information.
Yeah, people are encouraged, you know, to do the social distancing, that's staying at least 6 feet away from people, especially those who have symptoms. I mean, if you do have symptoms, you are encouraged to stay home from work, stay home from school, stay out of public areas. You know, symptoms include a fever or a cough, you know, even a runny nose, just so that, you know, we don't spread infection. Especially, you know, for people who are over the age of 60 or perhaps have compromised immune systems, are encouraged to take extra precautions, you know, really stay away from crowded areas. You know, things you can still do solo activities, you know, go for a walk by yourself outside. The main thing that is just sort of being recommended is, you know, no close contact with people and no crowded events. And so the Iowa Department of Public Health set up a hotline 211 that you can call if you have any questions, you know, if you have symptoms, and just to see what's going on with COVID-19 in the state. Over the weekend, the University of Iowa healthcare system announced they're also setting up a couple hotlines. One is for just general information on COVID-19. That number is 319-384-8819. They also have an additional hotline for people with flu and COVID-19 symptoms. That number is 319-384-9010.
Okay. And a quick word before we say goodbye, Natalie, and let you get to this press conference by the governor. IPR has a live blog, and we'll be tracking news developments of this epidemic, won't we, with that blog?
Yeah, so we've been running this blog since last week, and we are constantly posting updates on what we're hearing with closures, what public health officials are saying, what state officials are saying, what's happening with the legislature, which has been suspended for 30 days. So you can go to iowapublicradio.org and check out our blog and our social media, and we'll keep you up to date with what's going on.
Okay, IPR health reporter Natalie Krebs, thank you, and we'll look forward to your reporting from the governor's news conference.
Thank you, Ben.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, of course, IPR News, who will be keeping you up to date day by day, week by week, whether it's online or traditional broadcast through the blog that we just talked about. As the profile of this epidemic changes today, finally, we want to give you a glimpse. We thought it would be valuable of how our news team will be covering this epidemic and let you know about a few changes that you might notice. Joining me to do that is Iowa Public Radio's news director, Michael Leland. Hello, Michael.
Hey, Ben.
I want to reach out to the listeners. If you have a question on your mind about the way we at IPR and working with NPR are covering this epidemic, call us 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org is our email. We just start out very broadly, Michael. How will IPR cover this unprecedented outbreak?
Our priority is always going to be bringing major developments, and that includes key announcements coming from the governor's office or from the State Department of Public Health, things that people need to know either about things that affect their health or major changes in their way of life. And we'll be at those whenever we can, no matter when they happen. For example, over the weekend, the governor had a news conference Saturday night, I think it was around 8:30 or so, to announce that this had reached a community spread phase. Katarina Sestaric went out to that news conference. Lindsay Moon, our digital producer, made sure that that story got on the web by Saturday night, and then we were able to hear Katarina's stories on Weekend Edition on Sunday morning. Same thing yesterday. The announcement came out with the governor recommending that that schools be closed for 4 weeks and that the state legislature was going to be suspended for at least 30 days. We were out covering that. So, that's, the low-hanging fruit in a way. It's the obvious things that we need to cover. But this, as you might imagine, is going to be a long-term story. This is going to be something that will be affecting us for weeks and possibly months to come. And we'll be talking regularly about, what do people need to know this week or today, how this affects their lives, how it's affecting schools, how it's affecting the economy, how it's affecting, transportation. I mean, so many things that are going to be connected to this. So, so we'll be doing as much as we can is a very short answer to a very, to a very, very big situation.
Yeah. And we are an organization like any other organization. We happen to work for Iowa Public Radio, and we are taking the advice as well here. Michael, this might be something that our listeners will notice, that we will have fewer, if any, guests in studio, right? Why would that be?
Social distancing is the word of the week, it seems. Whenever possible, we will talk to people on the phone or find other ways, whether it may be through Skype or other, technology that allows us to talk to people without actually being close to them. Obviously, there are some situations where we will need to talk to people in person, and we'll be as careful as we can in those situations. All of our, reporters, one thing that many of you might know is that reporters often work remotely, whether it's covering something and then, going to a coffee shop or a library and writing up their stories and producing it and sending it to the newsroom. There will be more of that happening as, some reporters who don't need to be in the office every day will be spending more time probably working from home and doing telephone interviews through their phones connected to their tape machines or their we still call it tape, but it's not anymore. But you may notice that, but guests on your program are more likely to be on the phone, I think, than in any of our studios around the state. So I think those will be the obvious things, but I would hope that no matter what we use technology-wise to talk to people, that the information that we're able to bring to people is important and relevant to them.
Right. And you as the news director oversee the fact that we have, and with our professional reporters, getting the facts right, fact-checking, finding out what are the sources are especially important at this time of, frankly, of time of anxiety, Michael Leland, because we know you can go to any number of social media sites and not receive credible facts about mm-hmm. what's going on right here. So we continue, as with any issue, to be fact-checking, to making sure that we don't pass along any information that would not sort of reach that hurdle, right?
Right. I mean, we feel pretty good about information coming out of the State Department of Public Health. So, we will rely on them to be, an expert through all this. Same with people that, we've built up sources in hospitals and clinics around the state over the years. Those are people we can trust to give us the straight story. But when you start hearing things that maybe aren't properly sourced or sound like it could be it's something that a lot of people may be interested in, but I can't prove that that's true. Those are the things that we want to spend a little bit more time to find out, where that information come from. How do you know it's true, and how does the person who told you that it's true know that it's true? Again, it's especially when you're dealing with public health. It becomes even more important, and it's always important to be accurate, but I feel that, it's a step above that.
Right, and it's especially important in a year when we have a presidential election, mm-hmm. That it's coinciding with it, and there will undoubtedly be stories where politics and the coronavirus epidemic intermingle, so to speak. Another change that IPR listeners will notice, events, IPR events, obviously, like other events. The CDC saying there should be cancellation or postponement for the next 8 weeks of any event that would be attended by 50 or more people. Pints and Politics, which I was to moderate last week on Thursday in Cedar Rapids, canceled for that very reason. So that will be noticeably absent from it. I wanted to ask you a little bit more. We had Natalie talk a little bit about the new blog here. Add to that, because people can get in touch with us then on this blog and submit questions, right?
Right. So two functions of the live blog. I think one of them, maybe even three functions. One is, this lives on our website, so you can go to our homepage and look for the word live blog, and the rest of the headline may change depending on what the top story is. But that is just something we keep adding to as we get more stories in, and they may be, some of the longer stories that we do, and you may get a summarized version of it there with a link to the longer story. Or, over the last several days, we get more, just smaller bits of information in that are good to pass along and are interesting, but maybe aren't the kind of thing we would spend a lot of time creating a whole separate web post on. So those go into the live blog in a way that, if you want to know what we're covering and what we're paying attention to, you can go to that site. It's being updated by our digital producer, Lindsay Moon, has been doing a great job with it. Matt Surin has been adding to it. Katarina has. Natalie, we're keeping an eye on information that we get that we want to be able to share with people. So, you just look for the words live blog on our site, and that'll get you the latest information that we've been able to cover. But on that blog, yes, as you point out, is an opportunity for you to ask questions. What do you want to know about COVID-19 in Iowa? And maybe you've heard something that you're not sure about, or maybe something's happening in your community, or you just have a question about the way the state is doing something. It's a good way for you to raise that question with us. And as often as we can in our reporting, we'll try to ask those questions of our leaders and try to find out some of this information. I talked to you a few minutes ago about the types of stories we want to cover and the major developments and the announcements. And, that's sort of our second nature. What are the things? What are the basics that we need to cover? What we can't do very well is read minds and know what you're thinking and what you're wondering right. about. And that's where something like that comes in, if you have a question for us, you know, we're probably not going to be able to answer everyone personally, but we will read them all and discuss them as part of our story planning process.
Right, and we have so much terminology. That'll be, I'm sure, in some of the answers to the blog, terminology that is new to all of us popping up. Of course, it's been several weeks that we've been exposed to the terminology of this epidemic, coronavirus. So for instance, tell us the difference. What is coronavirus versus COVID-19?
I'll give you my very unscientific answer because I'm not a doctor, nor do I play one on the radio. But you know, there are, from what I understand, you know, a family of coronaviruses. You know, the common cold is a type of coronavirus. These are, you know, out there. This one is a new, which is why you often hear the term new coronavirus or novel coronavirus. And it's why it's getting so much attention. You know, no one has immunity to this thing. We don't have a vaccine for it. So that's the virus. COVID-19 is the disease, the illness that is caused by this virus. And you know, it basically it stands for coronavirus disease 19 because it came about in the end of 2019. So that's the difference. When we talk about, you know, COVID-19 as the actual sickness, coronavirus or the novel coronavirus is the particular virus that's leading to the sickness.
Mm-hmm. And the new term that popped up this weekend and the governor's video statement yesterday, community spread. So mm-hmm. this is interesting. I mean, it is the fact that someone has contracted COVID-19 and there's no obvious sign that that person was had traveled anywhere to get it, where so many of the cases, there was the travel group that returned from Egypt, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where Johnson County got so many of its positive COVID-19 cases.
Right. You think about it as, you know, if, you know, for instance, you may come down with the flu, you may come down with a cold, you wake up one morning, you're sick, you don't know what you did to contract this virus or where you went or who gave it to you. That's community spread is the simplest way I think of it. You can't identify where you might have picked it up, but obviously you did.
Mm-hmm. When we talk about, obviously, the first few days, this is very new to us, and our news is dominated for good reason by the financial side, the health side, so many different facets, as you mentioned, of this new era we face. We hope it won't be very long that we face it. But as news director, Michael, when other news is taking place not related to this epidemic, how do you find the right balance? Because you can't just do 24/7 of only coronavirus-related stories, right?
Mm-hmm. You decide what's important to the newsroom and to your audience, and look at the people you've got to cover this. I mean, there's always more going on than we have the ability to cover. But you know, I can give you an example for. You know, the state legislature, until this afternoon anyway, has been chugging along for the last couple of months. You know, that's one of our areas of coverage that's been a priority. So we will, you know, we have been covering that on a regular basis, even as all this other coronavirus news has needed coverage as well. You know, other things are going to happen. You know, we had the caucuses, so obviously we paid a lot of attention to that. You know, of course, that was before this became such a big issue. So there's always going to be decisions being made. I think, you know, as you listen to IPR in the weeks and months ahead, you'll probably be hearing more news that is somehow tied to this virus, especially as people have lots of questions that need to be answered and a lot of things are happening that affect people. But, you know, every day we make decisions about, you know, what do we cover, what do we not cover. But we do want to pay attention to some of these other things. We're still watching, you know, education and water quality, and eventually the legislature is going to come back into session and we'll get back to covering our state lawmakers. So, you know, really, it sometimes it's a day-by-day decision. You know, these are the three things we could cover. These are the two people we have to do it. So, mm-hmm. You know, where do we make that choice?
Right. And quickly, before we say goodbye, the time is slipping away. How do people ask a question for our news team via the blog again?
Go to the website where it says live blog. That'll take you into the blog, and it's right in one of the opening paragraphs. There's a link that invites you to ask a question about, you know, what your thoughts are about how coronavirus is being handled in Iowa.
Okay, IPR News Director Michael Leland, thanks for stepping into the studio, Michael.
Yeah, thanks, Ben.
Coming up tomorrow on this program, we're scheduled to have Congresswoman Cindy Axne of Iowa's 3rd District join us. Of course, she'll address this national health emergency and answer your questions about this epidemic and other issues. Cindy Axne, Representative Axne, tomorrow on the program. Also, a conversation with best-selling author and biologist Neil Shubin tomorrow on the program. River to River is produced by Rick Brewer, Caitlin Harrop, and Matt Alvarez. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Ben Kiefer. Stay well, and thanks for joining us.